bring you back exactly where we were, where we left, where we held. If you remember, recall last week, what we did was we discussed the order, the circumstances under which, from the inception of the period of a woman, the criteria by which a woman becomes anida, becomes prohibited, whether, you know, it's a natural flow or it's a stain, sometimes a physical examination, whatever the circumstances might be that according to halacha render a woman to be in this status of anida, then the halacha requires that there be a mandatory 5-day count from the time that she sees, the day that she sees is counted one. No matter what part of the day she sees, that day is counted as the first day. She might see in the evening, if she saw this evening, for example, Monday evening, after sunset, not after Tzeis HaKochavim, but it goes from sunrise to sunset. So it goes from sunset to sunrise is the evening, sunrise to sunset is the day. If she were to see tonight at 10 after 8, then she would be required to count this as day one. Day one would end tomorrow, Tuesday, at nightfall, and then she would be required to count another 4 days. It's 4 days plus the day that she sees. So you would have Tuesday would be day one, if it would be, she'd see now, so it would be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. That would be 4 days plus the day that she saw. That then would require her at that point to create or to do a Hefsek Tara. A Hefsek Tara would be, that bedika, that check, that if it came out clean, would establish the transition from Tuma to Tara. It would again begin, it would start the process by which she can count Shiva Nikiyim, 7 clean days. Might I add that many times it does not work out that 5 days is the time that a woman automatically would be able to start her count. Sometimes a woman might have a very long cycle in the sense that she would continue to go not only 5 days, but 6 days, 7 days, 8 days, sometimes 9 days. And obviously that would have halachic ramifications in terms of the opportunity to have children. And these are very, very serious shilas in terms of how to deal with them. But I must tell you that there's very little flexibility with regard to the count. 5 days is the mandatory count. There are circumstances, and a Rav has to be asked about formulas and ways in which maybe 4 days can be used, but it's only under very, very specialized situations. So as a rule, there's 5 days. That gives way to 7 days, Shiva Nikiyim. At the end of Shiva Nikiyim, the period of 7 clean days where she makes 2 bedikas a day, 2 checks a day. At the end of the 7th day, before Shkia, before nightfall, she does her last bedika, which would be altogether the Hefsek Tara plus each day 2 bedikas, which would come out at the end to be a period minimally of 12 days. It could go much longer, but nevertheless, there is no way to get around the Shiva Nikiyim, the 7 clean days. There is no halachic formula to go ahead and cut down the 7 clean days. That's already fixed. The halachic requirements with regard to doing 2 bedikas a day, which of course is preferential, which should be done. But if there are extenuating circumstances, we mentioned that sometimes maybe attention could be done to do one. Sometimes, even if that becomes severe and women have great difficulty, a Rav should be consulted as to what days could be done without. But nevertheless, the halachas that I do share with you are, of course, l'chadchila, those halachic requirements that deal with the preferential and the manner in which it's suggested and that the halacha would require, would want us to do it. Then at the end of the Shiva Nikiyam, the seven clean days, the woman is able to go to mikveh when it is nightfall. And so that this is the order, this is the seder in which the overview of the period of time from the inception of the period until its conclusion with the mikveh, how it breaks down in terms of the time frames involved. The areas of halacha that we will deal with this evening are the harchakas. The harchakas are those halachas that deal with the proper conduct of the separation between husband and wife during this time, from the time the period begins until the woman goes to mikveh. These harchakos, the word comes from the word, you know, rachok, means which is what? To separate, to create distance. It is not intended to create emotional distance necessarily. One has to find ways, as we've discussed previously, to have effective communication with a wife at this time. She shouldn't be shunted, chalila. And it takes great wisdom to be able to know, to walk that fine line, you understand, between maintaining and continuing and to communicate and at the same time not be in any way, you understand, tread lightly upon that which the rabbis wanted it to be, a period of separation, and at the same time to be able to respect, you know, the dignity, you know what I mean, of the relationship and the dignity of the woman, and at the same time preserve the halachic requirement that it should be done tznius, that there should be even a greater measure of modesty during this time and care in terms of the way we speak, not in any way, you know, to be too suggestive or to use the right words and not to be in any way, you know, to create, you know, to an inciting situation between husband and wife. According to the halacha, these harchakos, these separations, are very, very extensive, and they reflect the different nature of men and women. And I will address that shortly. The harchakos, these separations, of course, basically, there is to be no physical contact. That is the major premise. There are no physical contacts that's permitted during this entire period, from the time that the period begins until it completes itself, and the woman goes to mikveh. There is to be no physical contact, no hugging, no kissing, none of those, you know, physical expressions between husband and wife. But it goes way, way beyond that. The halacha will require as well that one not express those activities that even ever so slightly could be defined as something of an intimate nature. All of those things also as well were removed from the agenda and not permitted to be done between husband and wife. For example, a man is not permitted to sit on the bed of his wife. Even if she is not present, not lie on a bed and not sit on her bed, this was a harchoka, it was intended to be a psychological distancing. And the halacha was sensitive that this itself, you know, could create a certain, you know, mindset in terms of the husband's attitude, and therefore this was prohibited. However, interestingly enough, it was not prohibited for the woman to sit down or to lie down on the man's bed. Obviously, he's not on the bed. Why? Because there was a recognition that those areas, you know, what the Chachamim defined and understood to be those expressions that would bring one closer to their mate, would be much more inflammatory, if I could use that word in a very general sense, in terms of how it would be received by the husband versus the wife. The wife would be much more controlled, and as such, her sitting on the bed of the husband, you understand, would not, you know, incite her as much as the husband, and therefore the Chachamim, you know, prohibited the man from doing that activity, but did not prohibit the woman. There are other areas where you see that there is a halachic sensitivity to the difference between the nature and personality of the man and the woman. The halacha is, and this shaila I've received many, many times, let's say that one of the spouses are not well. The husband may not be well, the wife is not well. When the wife is not well, the shaila is the husband permitted to help her? So the halacha says that it's a much more severe shaila when the husband is well and the wife isn't versus the other way around. When the husband is not well and the wife is well. When the husband is not well and the wife is well, the husband who is the sick party and his wife gives him insist and helps him, you know, even what I call helping, we're not talking about, you know, preparing food or other things, we're talking about physical contact, we're talking about holding his hand, holding his arm, directing him, guiding him. The halacha will say that the husband's disability and the wife's strength is a combination that the chachamim will accept. And given the fact that the husband is in need, then the woman would be permitted to extend herself, even of a physical nature, to be able to assist the husband. But when the wife is not well and the husband is well, there the halacha is much more severe and circumspect. And that requires a shailas chacham, that requires a shailah of a rav, to determine exactly the nature of the disability or the sickness that might be involved that would legislate or require and permit to have the husband who is well to be able to assist his wife. And so again, you find the sensitivity, the differentiation between the husband and the wife. I'll give you another example. The halacha brings down that let's talk about food. Okay, a husband eats the meal and he leaves over, you understand, half of his steak. Half of the steak. I take steak, you understand. Because not many more things would we take, you know, from another party, but we'll take a steak, half the steak. The husband leaves over the steak. What's the halacha? The husband leaves over the steak? Yeah. The wife will say, honey, I'll take the rest. And she takes the steak and she can do it. He goes ahead and he drinks, you know. He leaves over half his soda, half of his drink. The woman will say, I'll take the cup, and takes the cup itself and drinks from it. Now let's play the scenario the other way around. Yeah, the woman leaves over part of her steak, and the husband says, honey, you think maybe you can do something? What's the halacha? Nix. You can't do it. The husband will not be able to have the steak of his wife. However, let's imagine, you understand, that the wife ate the steak, you understand, before the husband came home. And she left over half the steak. And there are more people in the house than just the wife. There are children also. So the husband goes, looks in the refrigerator, and sees half the steak. What's the halacha there? The woman is not obligated to tell the husband, did you like my steak? That the halacha is not required. If what he doesn't know can't hurt him. And so in that case over there, the halacha would tell us that she is not required to say that. And so therefore, whatever psychological implications might, you understand, these subconscious stirrings, you know, that might exist, but by the fact that it's obscured from him, it's not known to him, then we have covered the bases and we would permit him to go ahead and have that steak. However, a drink that the woman would have, of course, if it's not known that the woman drank, of course, there would be no problem. But even if the woman drank and she leaves over half her soda, the husband has recourse to have the other half, what's left over. And what is that done? That would just simply require that the wife transfer not the glass to the husband, but rather to transfer the contents of one glass and put it into the glass of the husband. In that case, if the glass, you understand, remained, you know, with the wife, and it was only the contents were poured into the husband's glass, that would be permissible. So whereas liquid permits it to be transferred from one keli to the next, from one vessel to the next, but food is not permitted to be transferred from one vessel into the next. That will not work, and therefore the halacha would require that it could not be taken. Now, what would happen if, let's say, because these halachas are very prominent, and they're the ones that come up most often, what would happen, you know, if you went to a restaurant? Husband and wife are at the restaurant, and, you know, sometimes, you know, my wife and I will order different things. One time, you know, because, you know, just for variety, you know. And so I'll order A, and she'll order B. And then she'll say, you know, would you like to have a little bit of A before the meal begins? What's the halacha there? So if you go ahead and you divide it, you understand, and it's not, because that will not be defined as leftovers. You see, leftovers is only at the point where already it has been partaken of, and she has eaten and left it over. But if at the beginning, you understand, the steak was divided, right? They said husband and wife, you know, cost a fortune to go ahead and have a steak. You know, get one of these, you know, so they'll say, listen, let's take, you have two plates and one steak, and we'll divide the steak in half. What's the halacha? Halacha is that you could do, because that's not defined as a leftover. You understand, that was initially, originally, you know, accepted as what would be the point of division between the husband and the wife. Yes, Bob?
But in that case, you would expect the husband would be the person who divide the steak in half and take his portion, and the wife would then take what was left?
Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't make a difference how it works.
Come in contact with it, or?
No problem.
And the other question was, if there's this, let's say, there's only a couple, there's no kids involved, right? And he comes home late and there's a steak up there.
That's a problem. Well, it could only be understood that it was him. That it was only her.
Yeah.
We would hope. Right. That's why I mentioned there were children in the house. Otherwise, if by force, you understand, of, you know, a limited process of elimination, this she's the only one, then obviously, you know, that would be true. Okay, now, let's talk about a poo-poo platter. What's the halacha of a poo-poo platter? Are two people allowed to eat from the same plate? Husband and wife, you know, want to make, you know, it's nice, you know, candle like this, we're going to eat from the same platter. Are you allowed to eat from the same platter? The halacha is no. However, you are allowed to take from the same platter. For instance, if there's a platter, you understand, like a poo-poo platter, you know, you go to a restaurant or, you know, they have a big, you know, center platter, you know, of chicken. What's the halacha? Well, obviously, you know what I mean, since you're not eating from that center platter, but what you're doing is what? You're taking the food from the center platter to be put on your individual plates, then the halacha would permit you to go ahead and do it in that fashion. That's no objection. Let's talk butter. You're talking about butter, you know, on a, you know, margarine, right? Not individual pats, but rather you're in your house and you're going ahead, you know, that's also okay. Even though both of you are taking, you understand, from one butter, but obviously you're not eating together from the same thing, but rather using that butter, you know, as a center piece, you know, by which, you know, you're taking it from there to put either on your plate or to put on the food that you have. That would be permissible. Parenthetically, you know, with this, should also be mentioned the idea that when a husband and wife are eating alone at the table, not in the presence of their children that are there or anybody else, but let's say they're a chassan and kala, they're first married, or children are away, then during the period of time that the woman is not permitted to her husband, there has to be a hecker. There has to be some recognition, you know, some differentiation that this is a physical awareness that this is the time of the month where the husband and wife are not permitted to each other. So sometimes, for example, if usually you wouldn't have a vase with flowers on it and you would put it on the table, or you'd have a different type of placemat, or any physical reminder that this is a different part of the month, then the halacha would say that that's what a husband and wife should do. There has to be something different, a placemat, a tablecloth, flowers, something that reminds us physically, cognitively, that this is a time of the month that the husband and wife are not permitted to each other. However, if there are children at the table, or there are any other people present, then the halacha is that obviously this takes away the intimacy of the moment, you understand, and there is nothing to be concerned about. Okay? Again, the sense that food, you understand, and the eating and the ambiance that's created, you understand, could create, you understand, could be suggestive and could be in some way, you know, bring the husband and wife together. And therefore, the Chachamim understood, you know, psychologically, that this is something, you know what I mean, that should be avoided. Now, Reb Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting thing with regard to these halachas that's really interesting. He says like this, let's take a challah roll. Let's take a chocolate bar. Let's split a chocolate bar. He says anything that's made that one person should have, that's something that should not be divided between the husband and the wife. An item that's specifically made, you understand, yeah, for one person to consume, the fact that two people are sharing it is not such a good idea. And so he's the one, I think, I saw first brought down by him, that if possible, that that should be, avoided. I want to give you another halacha. What about singing, a woman singing in the presence of her husband during the time of the month that she's in either? Is that permitted or not? So even there are different opinions. There are those that permit and say that it's okay, and there are those that say that it's preferably not. I think that it's pretty much accepted. I'm not sure, but I think it's accepted. You know, aside from the problem of kol isha in the presence of other men, but only if the husband and wife are together with their children, if it's that time of the month and she's not permitted, that the husband and wife are not permitted to each other, it would be advisable, yeah, to that the woman should not sing. You know, even if it's Zemiris on a Friday night, that would be a suggestion. That would be preferable, though there are heterim. There are people that permit it. I think that it would be advisable, if possible, to not to do that. There is a specific, you know, issue in halacha about handing from one person to the next. A wife to a husband or a husband to a wife during this period of time, are not only are they not permitted to have physical contact with each other, but they're not permitted to hand anything to each other. However, to throw something, if it would be, you understand, you know, if it's on a line drive, that's a problem. However, if it's done, you know, not directly, but it, you know, it goes up and then comes down, then the halacha would say that that would be what? That would be okay to do. Now, I don't know what you're going to do with a little child. Now, I don't suggest that you throw the child up, you know, from the husband to the wife or the wife to the husband. There are more severe problems with that, you know what I mean, than you would imagine. That's a very big problem. You just don't hand an infant from one to the other. You don't hand an infant from one to the other during the time that a woman is not permitted to her husband. And caution should be given and ways should be devised, you know, by which, you know, and more than anything, at a consciousness, you know, we lapse, we forget, you know, sometimes we're caught off guard, it's in public, and we're embarrassed. And I must tell you that I saw great people, you know, as I became aware of the halachos, you know, that their conduct in, with their husband and wife was such that they never handed anything to each other. Never handed anything to each other, so there was never a differentiation between that time of the month that they were permitted to each other and that time of the month that they weren't. It was always the same. They never handed anything to each other. And so at that time, you know what I mean, people would know that they always did it that way. And if they always did it that way, nobody would ever know. So it was something that was a very matter of great sneus, modesty, that I observed a particularly great couple. And that was one way in which they handled literally this sensitive halachic issue. But of course, obviously, the halacha does not require that during the times that a husband and wife are permitted to each other. And so therefore, one is permitted, obviously, to do that. There is also a halacha with regard, if let's say you want to go on a seesaw, right? You're going to go to the park. And so what is the halacha? Are you allowed to do that during the time that a woman, husband and wife, not permitted to each other? The answer is no. You're not permitted to create motion on a surface where one will sit and the actions of one will cause the other, you understand, to feel that movement. I'll give you an example. You want to go canoeing, or you want to go, you know what I mean, on one of these boat rides, you understand, these small, paddle boating. Could you go paddle boating during that time of the month, you know, that the husband and wife are not permitted to each other? What's the halacha? Halacha is you can't. Because when you go on the paddle boat, the movement of one affects the other. However, let's say you're talking about going in a car. Car is okay, because the seat, you know what I mean, each one has a separate seat, and the movement of one is not necessarily affecting the other. Let's say you have a couch, and the couch has different, you know what I mean, cushions. Then, of course, obviously, again, the halacha would permit, and there's no problem one from the other. However, if you share the same surface, and by sitting one, the other will feel that movement, then the halacha would say that is not permissible to be done. And so, therefore, one should give consideration and care to be able to know how to handle that properly and appropriately. Of course, obviously, I need not tell you about sleeping in the same bed is not permitted during this period of time. Also, obviously, we have requirements to have two separate beds. And also, at the same time, to please take note that there should be the beds. That if a husband's arm or the wife's arm turn over, that they don't find themselves in the next bed. So there should be a distance between one bed and the other. Also, you know, as a means of harchaka, as a means of effective distancing, that if nothing should come, you know, there should be no contact, should come from one to the other. That's an overview of some of the halachas with regard to this. In fact, you know, there is a halacha with regard to pouring wine on Friday night. You know, you put it away, a little bit away, you know, you don't hand the wine to your wife on Friday night. Husband makes kiddush, pours the wine into a cup, right? He doesn't take the glass and hand the glass to his wife. He leaves it in front of him. And then she goes ahead and she takes it. Why? Because I think there's something special about wine. Obviously, wine is a very special drink. And so by him putting it in front of him, you understand, and then she taking it from there, it's much less suggestive or whatever than it would be if he were to go ahead and give it to her, forgetting about it in her hand, but even putting it in her place. When the woman will come to serve her husband during this time, she serves him with a shinui. She does not serve him, you know, within the normal way, but would serve him, if she usually serves him with her right hand, she would serve him with her left hand. I do suggest caution that if you're taking hot chicken soup Friday night, and you don't have your left hand to try to find out an eighth, you know. But again, even if the husband serving, the wife serving the husband, and the food, you understand, self is an area of, you know, can somehow, you know, be suggestive or whatever. Insightful, and so this insight, so therefore, I'm required a differentiation. I want you to know what this halacha means. So halacha obviously means these are not just day activities that a woman does for a husband, but rather you understand there is a measure of love, there's a measure of respect, there's a measure of cover, there's honor, there's dignity. These components that obviously the Chachamim felt that if done properly and done in the right measure, then themselves, you understand, the kiruv halavavo, the intimacy between husband and wife. Just the mere fact that they're sitting together at the same table, central to create this kiruv, to create, you understand, this closeness. And I think that really what it portends of and what it communicates, aside from the technicality of the halacha, is that these are things, you know, that if done properly and done effectively, are in fact items or issues or circumstances that do bring the husband and wife closer together. And the potential of it, you understand, and the beauty of it and the importance of it, it should not be lost upon us just within the halachic framework alone, but to see it also in its bigger picture as well, in its global sense, in terms of the potential, you know, that even these simple tasks that we take for granted and we don't really fully appreciate when one does for the other, does have a potential in bringing us closer together. And so care should be taken here during this time when the halacha does not permit it, and appreciation and recognition when the halacha does. Yes, Ranan.
In terms of, you may have discussed this, I got here late, in terms of opening the door for the wife or vice versa, if you're walking out of the house and
I have not seen anything against opening the door.
I'm keeping it open until...
It's okay. It's okay, you're fine, you can do it. Yes, I haven't seen any... We do not have to be more machmir than the Chachamim, right? And so it would appear to be something, you know, of a very nice gesture and something of very, very fine, but yet the halacha in no way felt, you know, that this expression or this activity is something, you know, that could
so
create.
As you're opening up, you can hold the door open and your wife can walk in while you're holding it open.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's okay. Yes?
Question of serving, is that in his presence? So if there was soup, you know, she's in the kitchen and filling the bowls up and
I assume if he doesn't know, if he doesn't see, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
That would be fine. I'm sure that it's in his presence. Okay? That's just an overview of the Harchokos. Okay? Now, obviously, I need not again accentuate the idea, emphasize the fact that, especially in terms of speech, you know, there has to be caution and care using speech properly and not chalila seductively or whatever it is during this period of time. Of course, obviously, would betray the intent of the Chachamim. Okay, now let's talk about the last part of the presentation, and that has to do with setting the calendar. The Harchokos are the ones that mostly involve us directly, but this should be something that we should be aware of because it affects us, and it is another period on the calendar other than the unit of the minimal 12 days. And this is called the Vestos. The Vest is the time of the month that the woman is expected to see her cycle, expected to see her period. Naturally, a woman's body gravitates toward having a fixed cycle. Rabbi Feinstein told me, in Europe, all the women, he was a Rav in White Russian, Luban, says all the women had a cycle that was fixed exactly, and it never deviated. Literally, almost to the hour, they would see each and every month. It wasn't the exception, it was the rule that women had a Vest Kavua. I don't know, he says, what happened in America. Either Shinu Yavir, he said, either the atmosphere in America, yeah, or the food in America. I don't know what happened, but when it came to America, everything, you understand, went bonkers, he said. Didn't use that word. Yeah? Just totally everything else went Moshe Kapaya. If you have a woman today that has a ves kavua, what does it mean a ves kavua? A cycle by which every single month it comes exactly at the same time. And we will talk about the three possibilities, you know, the possibilities of the cycle regulating itself. The regular cycle would be, in one of two ways. Either it would be a regular cycle, would be the vest, would be on the same day of the month. In other words, a woman sees Zion. Let's say this is now coming to the end, of the month. And so let's say over here that this Shvat, let's say it's 27 or 28, the month of Shvat. And so she'll see 28 of Shvat, she'll be 28 Adar, 28 Nisan, 28 Iyar. Every single time it will be the same.
But that's not fixed.
Though. What?
That's fixed.
But it's the day of the month. That the body knows. The body knows the Hebrew calendar. The body knows the Hebrew calendar. Okay? So that's called the Ves Kavua. We'll talk about the Hebrew calendar in time, permit me. Yeah, okay? So what do we got? Got every single month, what does it go by, Herbie? The same day on the what? The same day on the calendar month. That's it. 28th of the month. You can mark your calendar literally by the hour. Forget about the day. That's a ves kavua. Another way that it could establish itself is by the interval. What does the interval mean? The interval means that it works by the days in between. You understand, from the last seeing to this seeing. In other words, there's always an interval of 30 days between one re and the other. It's not on the same calendar day, but it is always what? With the same amount of days between one seeing and the other. That's called the Vest Haflogah. Okay? And so those are the two basic vestos, ways in which you know that it could come out kavua, and that it seems to be in the halacha, you understand, the idea of what generally the body is always striving to achieve. It's trying always to achieve what? Regularity. What does that mean? It means if the woman has an irregular period, it has to always be assumed that what? She, the next month, is going to establish what? A regular period. You always have to be such. She could have an irregular period for 20 years, but you have to be choshed to suspect that this month a new regular period is coming to town. And so what's the halacha? The halacha is that let's say the woman sees, let's say, on Vav Zion Nisan, let's take seventh day of the month of Nisan, and she has an irregular period. Well, what am I going to do now? Zion Nisan, what do I do? The Chachamim said that there are three different possibilities that one has to take into consideration. One of them is called the Vest HaChodesh. If you see the seventh of the month of Nisan, then what do you got to say next month? What are you afraid of? Zion of the month of what? Iyar. That's called the Vest HaChodesh. It is the vest of the day of the month. Then there's another possibility. Well, you saw Zion Nisan. Is there anything else I have to be afraid of? Well, we discussed called the Haflogah. What does the Haflogah mean? The interval. Well, she saw the month before. Yeah, on Zion Adar. Zion Adar and Zion Nisan. She didn't establish the thing. How do you establish a chazakah, the fact that there is established irregularity? You have to see at least how many times? Three. So she didn't see three times. She saw this month Zion Nisan, and last month she saw Zion Adar. How many days is there between Zion Nisan and Zion Adar? Count it up. Count Zion Adar as day one, and count Zion Ches Tes, count it on the Hebrew calendar, and then count, you hear, the day of what? The day that she saw. Yeah, called Zion what? Nisan. Count up how many days. That start from Zion Nisan. Count those days forward, and you will come up with what is called the Haflogah. What does the Haflogah mean? The interval between last month to know how to project the following month. The days between the last month and this month's seeing, counting the seeing of the last month and using also that day that she saw as the number, starting from that day that she saw and counting those number of days will give you the projection of what the interval will be the next month. So now you know the trick of her calendar. Number one, it's called the Veswat HaChodesh, the day of the month. Vest HaFloga means what? The interval. And then there's one other called the Vespainini, which is the most severe of them. The Vespainini is a machlokas, whether it's 30 days or 31 days. Most people hold 30 days, people do 30 days, some people do both. Yeah, what it was 30 days? You count 30 days from the time that she saw, count off on the calendar, from the time she saw, the day she saw is one, count off 30 days, the 30th day is called the Vespainoni. Vespainoni. Okay, and that's it. That is the three calendar days that she counts. It's a very interesting halacha. If let's say a woman has a chazaka, has a history that she never sees less than 30 or 30, let's say 31. Never less than 31. Never sees less than 31. That regularity she has. She doesn't have regularity to see, you understand, on the same day of the month or the same interval every month, but she has regularity. She never sees less than 31. If a woman never sees less than 31, she never has to worry about a vest hachodesh, or never has to worry about a vest beinani. She doesn't have to worry about the day of the month, or doesn't have to count off 30 days. Why? Because she knows her body, and what does her body tell her? That my regularity, if not regularity in terms of a system of when I see, there is a regularity in a system when I don't see. And what is that regularity when I don't see? I never see less than what? 31. That means, what are you worried about? It means you don't have to worry about the Vest HaChodesh, you don't have to worry about the day of the month, because I can't have a what? I'm not going to see on that day of the month, because to see on that day of the month would mean that what? That either it's 29 or it's 30, and it doesn't work. I never see less than what? Than 31. I don't have to worry about the Vest Beinoni, I have to worry about the Vest what? Of 30 days, because I never see 30 days. The woman then, you understand, it does not have this requirement. The only one that she does have is called the Vest HaFloga. She has to have the day of the interval. Every woman has an interval. And that interval, you understand, is what she has to have. In order to establish an interval, you have to have two calendar days. You have to have what happened on Zayin Adar and Zayin Nisan. So if the woman doesn't have a record of the month before, then there's no interval to be had. But as far as the Vest HaChodesh and the Vest Beinani, the day of the month, and the Vest Beinani, which is 30 days, that you only have to have a record of what? Of one time. But in order to be able to calculate an interval, you have to have a history of how many times? You have to have a history of what? Of two times to be able to establish the concept of interval. Okay. Yes, Renan.
Two questions. One, when you
said the people hold 31,
and some people hold 31.
Some people hold 30, some people hold 31. Some people are makbid to do both. But many people do 30. Okay, so let's do 30. Let's not machmir sugar. You get older and you want to take on chumris, you know what I mean? Take on chumris. Young people with the kallahs, you know, chassan and kallahs, we leave the chumris alone, Reb Stephen. Right? The chumris we leave alone. Okay?
How about a theoretical situation where a woman has an irregular period and she passes the three counts, you know, the chodesh, the afloga, the beinoni? Does one still have to be chashan because it's
no.
Irregular at that?
That's so it. So she just. That's it. Now let me mention a halacha. You hear? What are the conduct? You marked it off on the calendar. The woman must have a calendar. Every woman has a calendar that she secrets away. Right? If she doesn't leave it out, And that is the calendar, and as soon as the woman gets her period, the first thing she's going to do is make these calculations and projections. What's going to be down the pike? She counts off 30 days, she'll count off the interval, and she'll count off also Vest HaChodesh. A lot of times it could fall out on the same day. The Vest Beinoni and the Vest HaChodesh means the 30 days and the day of the month could literally come out on the same day. The interval most probably would be the one, the wild card, the one that would not be on the same day. Okay? Now, what is the conduct of this? Well, according to the halacha would seem to appear that the Vest HaChodesh, you see, Zayin Nisan in the afternoon. When is the Vest now? When is the Vest HaChodesh, Zev? She saw Zayin Nisan in the afternoon. Zayin Iyar, right? Zayin Adar ain't going to work. Yeah, Zayin what? Zayin Iyar, right? Month later. Well, when did she see? She saw by day. So, technically now, there's a prohibition, what? Only on that, what? Day. Remember, the day is broken up into what? Two parts, the night and the day. If she sees by day, she's prohibited by day. What is she prohibited by day? The halacha is that relations for that day is definitely prohibited. What does that day mean? That 12-hour period that she originally saw. So she saw Zayin Nisan by night, so she's also what? Zayin Iyar by night. What by night? What is prohibited? Relations, physical relations, you know. However, the halacha says that one is advised, tovel of bracha, that even chibuk v'nishuk, holding and kissing during this time, should be avoided. Tovel of bracha, it is a bracha, and we cannot, you know, have enough brachas, and so therefore we've accepted, or the halacha is here. Now, if that would be fine, what does she also have to do? So relations are not permitted. Chibuk v'nishuk is suggested, not tovel or bracha. She makes how many bedikas? Two bedikas she should try to make. It's much easier to do it by day. So day in the morning, she does it in the afternoon. At night, you know what I mean? She does it at night, you know what I mean? As far as night, and maybe, you know, does it maybe one other time if she's able to work it out. So at least one she has to do. Suggested to do two if possible. Two bedikas. Now we were happy. You'd imagine we can leave, finish class, end. But there's only one little thing. There is a chumrah from the Or Zeruah that is accepted, that not only is that 12-hour interval prohibited, but even the 12-hour period before is also prohibited. So that means if a woman sees Zayin Nisan by day, and now she projects and looks at her calendar and marks off the Vest HaChodesh, the time of the month, now we're holding Zayin what? Iyar, by day. Hey, 12 hours, day. Ah, we got away, we did it good this month. But it ain't going to work. Because the Or Zeruah says what? That not only is the day prohibited, but what? The night before. Whatever the 12-hour period before is, whether it's night or day, so we have now a 24-hour period. 24-hour period meaning from what? From the time that she saw projected is the Iker time, is the major time, to the Chumrah, you know, the extension of it to 12 hours before then. During this time, the 12 hours before, relations are prohibited, but Chibuk V'Nishuk, Yeheh, would not be prohibited, because that itself is only, you know, hugging and kissing, you know, those physical things are only prohibited during the what? During the 12-hour period, you understand essentially of that. And we're not required, you know, for the 12-hour period before then. So here we have now not only an overview of the halacha in terms of the major body of time that a woman is prohibited from the time of the onset of her period till the time that she goes to mikvah, but there are other calculations that she has to make, and that is in lieu of having a fixed period, she always has to be concerned that the body is striving to establish a sense of regularity, and therefore, hence we have these periods or times that are known as the vestos, the times of the expecting cycle, to establish some sense of regularity. And so therefore, the halacha will take these 3 days into account, and this becomes now the calendar that the woman has to deal with. Okay. This covers, you know, the basic halachas, you know, between the harchakos and the what we discussed today and the different units in terms of establishing the calendar. And if anybody has any questions now, you know, I'll be happy for 5 minutes, Harold, to take any questions that you have. 5 minutes, Harold. All right? No? 5 minutes. You can get the world in 5 minutes. Yes, Kenny. Kenny had his hand up
first. She either forgets or loses the calendar. What's
the hell up? She got to go ahead and call a rav. I have serious shilas. I have these shilas all, the calendar I don't have problems with. I have never had a shilas about a calendar. What I do have a shilas is, you hear, a woman lost the bedikah. Always happens. Takes a bedikah, checks, yeah, has a shilah on it, but she doesn't have it anymore. It got lost. I threw it away by accident. It's not here. What should I do? Tell me the color. Well, it was brownish. How much brown? Pretty brownish. Like, but like Nestle's cocoa. What could I do? Herbie, I can't do any. I need the specimen, Herbie. I don't have the shiloh. A chicken. You go ask a shiloh about a chicken. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's bloody. Let me see. I got to see. I got to see what's doing. So I have to be a mind reader. You know what I mean? I'm frustrated because I don't have what to answer. You know what I mean? I can't address. I've never had a shiloh of a woman losing her calendar. The shiloh sometimes you do have, Kenny, is where a woman forgets to make a bedikah on her vest. You hear? In other words, the halacha is that we suspect. Why does a woman have to make a bedikah on her vest? Why? Zev, why does a woman have to make? She should not even wear white during that time. She should wear white on that day. Why? Because we're expecting her period to come on that day. That's the projection. So she has to make a bedikah to know that nothing has happened. Now, what happens if she doesn't make a bedikah? Well, we got a problem if she doesn't make a bedikah. Why? Because if she doesn't make a bedikah, maybe it came, maybe a drop came, and the fact that she didn't make a bedikah didn't show up, but she really maybe something was there and she didn't know. Of the three, the one that is the worst to miss is the Ves Beinoni, the 30 days. And then you have to ask a Rav de Shaila. So if it already goes and it's past the time and she didn't make it then, you got to ask a Shaila what to do. Okay? So the Bedikas are important, all three of them. The one I think is the most stringent one is the Ves Beinoni. Okay? But that's the one. Those are the Shailas that I have. I have never yet had a calendar shiloh. The only way it would really be a problem with a calendar, I lost my calendar, would be that the woman goes away. And she had left her calendar behind. And she wouldn't remember, and so then we would have a shiloh. Yes, Rana.
Well, the chov obviously is on the woman in terms of keeping the calendar, apparently. Is it allowable for the husband to... we learned the halakas. I mean, is the purpose for us learning that...
You should have some. It's not a secret, the calendar. Right. You know, I don't think she. You know, it's not a lack of sneers for her because she has to tell you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to know. You understand when she tells you this is the calendar day coming. You know what I mean? This is the time. You should at least have familiarity, or to be able to know as a result of this that there is an anticipation. That there was going to be a certain time on the calendar that would not be permitted.
The chov is on the woman.
This is her mitzvah. Right? This is her mitzvah. And she's believed. And Ranan, we trust them implicitly. And they have their manus. A woman has a shalom on a myra and she says, I recognize this color. You believe her. And she's accepted. Yes.
Rabbi, last week you mentioned that the halacha brings such a a renewal to the relationship. Any guidelines for those for the situation that eventually happens when there's no longer a menstrual cycle, whether by natural means or by an operation? How do you get that renewal to happen?
I'm happy you brought this question up right now. I know. I anticipated that question. As everything else in halacha, first of all, this idea of renewal is a suggested, you know, pshat, you know, why, how it might be, you know, to understand, you know, the Torah, you know, one of the reasons the Torah might have imposed, you know, these halachas. Obviously, you know, as a couple gets older, you know, and becomes more accustomed to each other and whatever else, you know, obviously there must be a psychological mechanism that kicks in. You understand?
But there may not be age. Let's say at a young age, the woman has an operation as a hysterectomy, for instance.
Right. I imagine, you know, somehow the Eibishter would send his chesed, his kindness. You know, that there would be some compensating factors and something in the relationship, you know, that would permit, you understand, if not from, not through this means of this imposed renewal, but rather intrinsically from the relationship itself, you understand, there would be, you know, this special secret way in which the husband and wife themselves would find an avenue, a channel, you know, opportunity by which they can create their own renewal. You know, there is nothing more that the Eibishter is concerned about than Shalom Bayis. There's no greater mitzvah than Shalom Bayis. And surely you understand, if in fact this became the Hashgacha, the intervention from above, that there would be some way in which the Eibishter would send us either the wisdom or whatever else the relationship would benefit from to be able to create this, you know, the secret renewal. Yes.
There's no suggestion that the couple should continue as if?
No. I don't think so. I have never heard that before. No, I don't think so. No. I don't think so. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.